Today's episode of Rob is a Podcast is sponsored by CanvasPeople.com. CanvasPeople.com is so sure you're going to love their service. They're going to let you try it out for special $0 pricing on an 11 by 14 canvas photo. Just upload your photo, use the promo code RHAP, and you just pay the shipping. That's at CanvasPeople.com, promo code RHAP. Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now, here's a man who is to podcasting as Cole is to eating. I am Rob Cesternino. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. And we have a great recap of episode number 6 of Survivor: Heroes versus Healers versus Hustlers, because we have a fantastic guest with us here in the studio, back here, by my calculations, for the fourth time, believe it or not, a record-setting pace, maybe more so than almost any other guest, that he's right on Aris's heels, I think. Please welcome the great star of the upcoming Millennials versus Gen X DVD, David Wright.
Oh, my God. Yeah, hey, thanks for having me back, Rob. It's wonderful to be back in the studio.
Oh, wow. I mean, let's not overstate it, David. It's probably fine. And no, I'm very excited to have you here. And, of course, Millennials versus Gen X, available on DVD. robisawebsite.com/Amazon if you want to check it out. Was it on pre-order?
I don't think you can actually get it delivered yet.
When does that drop?
I think it's going to be...
Did you bring a clip?
No, I did not bring a clip. Okay. I think it's going to be like a year from now, probably.
A year from now?
Yeah, that's what I feel like.
Wow. I mean, that they announced it so far in the future, like it was less time between when you played in the season.
Yeah.
Era.
Well, it's strange because Caramoan just came out on DVD, and so we're pretty far behind. That's 7 seasons behind, so...
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll figure out all the logistics on that, the Millennials. But you've seen it before. You're probably not even going to. Will you buy it?
Of course I'll buy it because I'm weird.
You'll buy it and just put it on the shelf.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Well, we'll get into everything from this week's Survivor. Excited to talk it all through with you. David, I got to start packing, heading to New York this weekend for the next Know-It-Alls.
So exciting. I wish I could go to that. Yeah, that's going to be a lot of fun.
It's going to be a crazy night. We have a really big venue. It's like more people than we've ever had before at one of these things. So I'm a little nervous in terms of like the logistics of everything, but should be crazy. We're going to have the merge on Wednesday night.
Wow. Yeah, that's huge. Yeah, that'll be a big episode.
If you want to make it to the show, robhasawebsite.com/S35KIA is the link for tickets. robhasawebsite.com/S35KIA. We may also have tickets available that night, which we have not had in the past, where we've been in smaller venues that have been complete sellouts. So if you're on the fence and you're thinking about it on Wednesday night, we may be able to accommodate you at the door as well. We'll be at the AMC Link Lincoln Square 13 that night with After Party to follow. So very much looking forward to that. And of course, David, we have a lot to talk through with this episode of Survivor. I talked to Allie this morning on the exit interview.
How's she doing?
I thought she did a really good job on the exit interview. Very few awkward pauses or anything like that. And I thought that she was really, you know, was able to articulate why she was so frustrated with Chrissy and why she called her the liar of all liars.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Oh, God. I can't wait to hear that. Yeah, I actually met her a couple weeks ago.
Allie.
Yeah. Yeah. She's great.
Yes. Was that at the same thing that Nick Majorana was at?
Yeah, the very same. Yeah, the viewing party down in Manhattan Beach.
Yes. And so he was talking about that when he was here. Yeah, she had said about Chrissy that Chrissy really like sold her a story, which was like very much about how like, oh, we'll go to the family visit. We'll do this. And then I can't wait to see you with your loved ones. And Allie had said that she felt like that she really, you know, sold it, maybe even like so much, not so much that she was like, I don't believe her, but it was like, boy, if she's not telling the truth, this, you know, person is really going very far. I do think that that's an interesting line to walk on Survivor. And it's definitely something that I feel like in terms of playing Survivor, one of the things that I think is really not fun where, you know, you're bluffing to a person,
But then you have to really, you know, how far do you take it in terms of like the bluff of like, you know, you're not just saying to a person, hey, okay, we'll vote out, Frank tomorrow night. Like, okay, good. Or I'll write down Frank's name. But it's also like, okay, and then we're going to do this and then we're going to do this. And you're sort of like making like all these plans with a person. It's like, and then when we get home, like then we'll hang out all the time and then blah, 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 blah. But you know that they're like, oh no, this person's going to hate me tomorrow after we end up blindsiding them. So it is a difficult thing to, you know, think about. And, you know, how far do you take it when you're making these plans with people?
Yeah, I mean, you know, not everybody probably feels this way, but I really do believe there is a line that you shouldn't cross. But it's an icky thing to feel like you're emotionally manipulating people around you all because you want $1 million. And certainly it gets even worse when you're emotionally manipulating people that you're going to put on the jury. Obviously, that's you're going to get burned if you do that. But yeah, I never wanted to lie about anything other than who I was going to vote for. Certainly, I didn't always live up to that. Mm-hmm. But it's tricky.
It's tricky. And I think that that's also where like a lot of like the really bitter juries, like I think that that's where a lot of that bitterness comes from. And I do feel like that it's a thing where I played Survivor before I had kids. But I think that it's the kind of thing where people who are parents who play, like a lot of times they will like, be like talking about their kids a lot. And to me, it kind of strikes me as like, hey, you're not going to screw over my kids, right? Because we're talking about my kids so much. You know, I have kids. You won't screw me over because I have kids, right?
Yeah.
And so it's definitely, you know, a very unfun, I think underreported part of Survivor, how much, you know, people like, how far do you take the lie that you tell somebody?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I really struggled with that. And, you know, especially when people are getting really upset at you and you know you're lying to them and you're just looking right in their face and you're just thinking, I'm such a horrible person right now. Like, this is not something I do in my daily life, but it is a game and you got to play it.
Okay, so how's everything going in your daily life?
Daily life's going really well. We just recorded Rhys Darby for our animated pilot yesterday. So now we just need to do record one more voice and we can go forward with this animatic and hopefully find out. I'm hoping, I thought this was going to be the case earlier, but I'm hoping within a month or two to know whether or not this gets picked up for series. So really exciting work stuff. So yeah, we'll see what happens with that.
Yeah, that sounds incredible.
It's great. Yeah. I mean, it's the dream to like run your own show or create your own show. And it's been such an easy process because Rhys is just so ridiculously talented. And I'm really excited for people to hopefully get a chance to see this thing.
Okay. And how are you? I mean, you have been well documented on Survivor that, you know, you have a lot of anxiety, you're nervous. How are you holding up during like, are you sort of just like, it is what it is? Or are you really stressing
about the show? No, I'm not really stressing out that much because I really do believe in it. So I feel like in that sense, I've done all I think I can do to give it its best chance for, you know, turning into something. I'm sure if they say it's going, then I'll immediately have a panic attack. But for now, I'm pretty calm.
Okay, talk to me about the tribal council that we saw where Allie went home instead of JP. And I really want to sort of get from you in the tribe swap in Millennials versus Gen X, you swapped into a sort of a weird situation because you numerically had the advantage, but you were swapped with somebody that you had not been getting along with great in Chris.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I loved Chris. He was a great guy. And actually, we repaired our relationship after the swap. But I did feel good in that moment because I was in a majority alliance, you know, or at least majority Gen X anyway. And, but my season in particular, all the swap tribes, I believe someone went home from the majority, each tribal.
Yeah, 3 votes in a row.
But yeah, as far as the JP and Allie of it all, I do get the logic of wanting to vote out someone who's a physical threat. But at the same time, given what we saw coming back from Tribal last week and just how heated it got between Ryan and Allie, I just don't think there's any way that you don't vote out Allie because you're just never going to win her trust back. And come the merge, she's going to be like ready to throw you under the bus. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I think it was the right move. But I get the other side of it.
So let's just look at it from Ryan's perspective and just say that this was going to be like a package deal where that they ultimately ended up losing that second immunity challenge in a row after they kept Chrissy in the game. And then also you feel like that maybe they would have, if they would have voted out Chrissy, then, you know, you figure that, I don't know if that would have changed anything if Rourke ultimately makes them win that immunity challenge and then they avoid Tropic Council. So it seems like that they were going to two in a row, no matter how you end up slicing it. Do you think that Ryan is in a better position having now going into the merge with Chrissy and JP versus then if he would have been going in with Allie and Rourke?
Given what we saw, I think he's in a much better position. I really like where he's at right now. And honestly, I mean, watching that episode, there are a couple shots where he's just so emaciated. And we're only on day 14 or 15 or something. And so I think that no one's going to really be looking at him. And he's gotten rid of Allie, who didn't like him. So I feel he's propped up to do well. I don't think he's going to be a huge target.
But, you know, she did like him, and then he sort of has now squandered that relationship, and now she's gone. Okay, so that was, I agree that that was the right move. Once she has soured on him, then you have to take her out, that, you know, the fruit has gone bad.
Yeah, yeah.
So in that scenario, though, I mean, it's tough because the thing with Ryan and Chrissy is that, for me, Chrissy still has a better option, but Ryan also feels like that he has Devin, who has a better option. But now Devin also has a connection to Ashley. Do you think that, is there a chance that Ryan ends up getting left out in the cold?
Certainly it's possible, but you know, he didn't trust Rourke at all. And so I don't really know that he had any other better move. Well, it remains to be seen what'll happen.
But do you buy that he actually couldn't trust Rourke, or was it that he just really wanted to work with Chrissy because of that idol? Was that just a red herring?
You know, it's possible that it was, but I feel like he legit did not trust Rourke. Is that, what did you think?
I don't know. I mean, I don't get anything from the show or from the secret scenes that he didn't trust Rourke. I mean, he was saying to Allie that he didn't trust Rourke. But yeah, as Allie said to me in the exit interview, you know, he had to say something. He couldn't come out and say, well, the reason I had to work with Chrissy was because she had this day one advantage.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. But I don't know. Just in watching it, I didn't get it. It seemed like it was coming from a sincere place. So I understand the move, but yeah, it's, I think he's got a good chance. I like his chance, especially with a merge coming up. I just think he needs to eat a little more.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because, you know, I'm sure people have made the comparisons between you and Ryan. I'm sure that you've heard that.
I have heard that.
I'm not sure if you've heard comparisons with you and Dr. Mike.
Maybe only from myself. I mean, you know, he's
because to me, I almost feel like, and tell me where you come down on this, but I suspect you could relate more to Dr. Mike than to Ryan.
You know, I kind of feel like I'm the love child of like Dr. Mike and
yeah,
Ryan.
I had the same thought of like somewhere on a scale from Ryan to Dr. Mike, you're like in the middle.
Yeah, that's what it feels like to me in watching it. But yeah, I mean, clearly, you know, Dr. Mike is having this kind of growth edit. He's not really comfortable out there. Of course, I wasn't. He's got the jacket, you know, although he can fish. I never caught one thing out there except snails. So yeah, I think he's doing
ambitious.
He's doing a lot better than I am. But yeah, I do relate a lot to Dr. Mike. But I do see a bit of myself in Ryan's game as well.
To me, I think this is pretty interesting in terms of the casting of this season, that we have these two characters in Ryan and Dr. Mike who are out there, because I feel like that stereotypically we have like one of these characters potentially in a season, and rarely have we had two people who are both sort of like this fish out of water character that are in this season. And they do appear to be heading into sort of like divergent directions, where that it feels like to me Dr. Mike's story is one of like, hey, what am I doing out here? You know, I watched the show, and now he's sort of like really adapting to the elements, where he's finding the idol and he's fishing and he's, you know, and then, you know, we had that, you know, he was able to practice his trade when Cole ended up going down, and he's like, you know, a really valuable member of the tribe and is like really starting to like look the part of being the survivor, where Ryan, not to say that he isn't doing any of those things, but we're seeing him much more from the strategic game side of things, where he's like sort of emerging into, if not necessarily, I don't want to paint him as the villain of the season, but he's describing himself of like, why are people trusting me? They shouldn't trust me. I'm the biggest weasel here. Like, nobody should trust me. I don't know why they want to get close to me. So he's sort of, to me, ending up going down the path of sort of like the, you know, anti-hero route of the person that he's like the strategic person who's really like the agitator, as opposed to where Dr. Mike is going down the route of like having this coming into himself.
Yeah, maybe Ryan's a little bit like the Zeke from my season, you know, kind of like talking about this, these battles that are coming up. And yeah, again, not a villain, but sort of, or if he is, one that you're kind of rooting for, because I really like his game. But yeah, no, it's exciting to watch.
Do you think that these players are on a collision course?
You know, if I were Dr. Mike, I would want to work with Ryan, you know, because I think I would, as I did want to work with Zeke. And then, you know, what inevitably happened, he found out about that I was thinking about, you know, gunning for him in a few moves. And then mm-hmm. suddenly we weren't friends anymore. But I think certainly at the beginning of the merge, I would, if I were Dr. Mike or Ryan, I would want to like make a bond or connection with him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. To me, I really think that the merge is going to be a very interesting one to watch. And you guys obviously came into a merge in a similar circumstance where you guys had your initial tribes. Obviously, you guys had two while they had three. But merging from three tribes into one, there's so much to catch up on with these other tribes. What were those first couple of days like when you guys ended up becoming one tribe after being three?
It was overwhelming. As much as it was great to reconnect with Ken and see some other people that I had connections with, at the same time, it was just like, oh crap, there's like, you know, 10 of us now. We gotta like figure out what all these relationships are, how it's all going to shake out. And I was really worried about Michelle and Jay and Taylor. And, you know, I thought that they were going to really be strong. I was worried about Chris wanting to get back at me. There's so many variables that it's hard to feel safe that early. Even though there are more numbers, you should feel safe maybe, but not me, maybe just because I'm paranoid. But I hated the beginning of the merge. And then, of course,
because of the paranoia?
Oh yeah, just paranoia and just like what does the future look like? Like, we are now going to go to tribal now. Like, it doesn't, you know, you can't protect yourself anymore. And yeah, the only good thing that came out of it was the merge feast. And then, you know, we went through the wine and rum a little too fast. But mm-hmm. yeah, it was interesting.
So in terms of how that first target ends up being decided, where it does feel to me in the last couple of seasons, we have seen, you know, we talk for all the talk about the merge boot, and there certainly was a lot last night. It seems as though in a lot of these seasons, and I guess, you know, sort of take Ko Rong off the table because that they had a medevac right at the merge. But it seems as though we have sort of like a really non-threatening target to some degree end up being the new first person, sort of like an easy vote at the merge. Last season, we had Haley. In your season, Michelle ends up going out at the merge. In Second Chances, you know, it's Cass who, not to say that she's non-threatening, but, you know, that's sort of like an easy vote that everybody can agree on. So do you feel like, is that a new thing where it's like everybody is just like on that first merge vote of, okay, instead of like going big game hunting, is it okay, what's the easiest vote we can go for together?
Yeah, I mean, the truth is, you know, we didn't initially want to target Michelle.
I think you could even say Worlds Apart, where they sort of like targeted a couple of the no collar girls, sort of like in the, and then Jen, I believe, played the idol at that point,
yeah,
which knocked out Kelly. But the thinking was sort of the same.
Well, that's the thing too. I mean, like, you know, I don't know what all the conversations that these people in this cast have had, but at least in our season, we were really worried about where the idol was. It was like either Jay or Taylor had it. We didn't know. And then we were worried, actually, even Will was one of the people we were floating as far as who might have an idol. So that's, in that sense, that's why Michelle did become such an easy target, because we were certain that she didn't have an idol. But you are worried about that. You're worried about where the idols are, and you're trying to, you know, not tip people off that it's coming. And we're hoping too that Jay, Taylor, or Will, if they had it, would think we were coming for them. We vote out Michelle, and then the idol gets burned, and great, then it drops back into the game, and hopefully I find it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I in that sense, I guess the targets are easy post merge. So, who are your sights on right now, then, going into this merge?
Well, to me, if we're gonna just take a look at if they decide, okay, well, who's an easy target that we don't think is going to have an idol? That the person that, if I had to guess, I think that Desi is the person that fits that bill, because I think if I'm Ashley and Devin and we're sort of like looking at like, okay, well, Joe has already, you know, demonstrated that he's this self-interested player that will play an idol on himself. And so even though Devin is watching him, okay, well, maybe Joe does have an idol, maybe he doesn't. There isn't a lot of evidence to point to that he would play it on Desi necessarily. I think that of the healers, and my longstanding theory has been, I think that the hustlers and the heroes are going to get together at the merge, since there's seven of them and only five of the heroes, five of the healers, whether the healers stick together. I think that we could see them, like people like Joe and Dr. Mike, quickly end up jumping ship. But I do think that we might be headed towards a first vote, which could be, you know, this sort of a standoff, because you can't split the vote.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's interesting. I mean, Desi's already on record as saying that she's willing to turn on Joe. So I don't buy that their alliance is so strong or tight.
How will they convince people that they're not that? Like, unless they all defect.
Yeah.
And I could see a scenario where, like, Joe is saying, hey, I don't care about Dr. Mike, or I don't care about Cole and Jessica. But I mean, I think that Dr. Mike seems like he wants to work with Jessica based on what we're seeing on the show and in the secret scenes. So I don't know if they'll be like the healers. It would be very quick to me if they were all just to sort of scatter as soon as the merge hits.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I mean, and yeah, you hate to look like you're in some kind of a power couple or anything. Like, I remember when the merge happened with us and I was reunited with Ken, I kind of laid low and kind of stayed away from Ken when I was, you know, compared to how I was at the beginning of the season. And it wasn't until we would have any alone time that I would like re-up, like, hey, remember how great you mm-hmm. and I are, you know, yeah. as together as a team. But you know, I was always like really self-conscious about appearing too tight with Ken in front of other people. So it's an issue.
You know, what I do sort of like about this idea with this season, the way that it was designed, where we have these three tribes and then we also like broke into three tribes. So in, you know, millennials versus Gen X, I remember that there was like this thinking of like, okay, well, will the millennials all just get back together, or will the Gen X group end up getting back together? And so if like one of these original groups was able to reconstitute, they would be able to have the advantage numerically at the merge and potentially pick off the other group if they went back to their starting formation. Here, you will need a coalition. There is no group, even if there was a group of six that was completely intact, that they would still, you know, need to pull one person over from one of the other groups to be able to have the numerical majority at the merge. So I think it's sort of fun to have these people that have never been in groups larger than six.
No, I think that's true. I think the pace of the season is going to really pick up, and I think we're going to see a lot of surprises. So
yeah. In the commercial last night, the preview, that I believe it was Dr. Mike that was talking about, like, we need numbers. We need to build numbers. So trying to remember back to your season correctly. So at the merge, the Gen X people there were obviously you, Jessica, Ken, and then also Brett, Sunday, and Chris. So there were six Gen Xers that were there, and you guys merged at 13, right?
Yes, you're right. Yes.
Okay. So, how do you go about like trying to, okay, who are the people that we can pull over, and, you know, how do we build our numbers?
Well, I mean, in our case, I was so worried about, Chris. You know, we voted out Michelle first, but, I was so worried about Chris that, like, Zeke, I told him that I wanted to do that, and then he was all about it, and that lured Zeke over to our side. He, you know, and that was a scary thing too. I'm kind of surprised that happened because he had such a connection with Chris and Oklahoma of it all, and the Boomer Sooner.
But, Boomer,
yeah. But I guess I don't know. Maybe the nerdiness in me. And Survivor super fan, I think I maybe had just a little bit more connection with Zeke, and that ended up working out.
So with that group, ultimately, you guys did, you know, stick together for a couple of votes. And I do think that people like Taylor ended up playing into that a little bit in terms of some of the things that, you know, he did not come in and play particularly well at the merge with, like, making enemies out of a lot of people.
Oh, God. No. And it's funny, too, because I remember when at the, you know, one of these, what is it, the summit, I was shouting at him that I'll flip on my tribe.
I forgot all about the summit.
Yeah, that's a whole thing. And you know, you're supposed to make connections at the summit with people that you wouldn't otherwise have access to. And I set that little...
Did you like that? Should they do the summit on more seasons?
I mean, I think it's nice to have these people meet who, you know, rather than have to wait for, like, if whether they end up on a swap tribe or emerge. But, like, yeah, ultimately, though, I will say that in my season, it didn't really impact the game in any way, in any meaningful way.
Mm-hmm.
Taylor did come back up to me after the merge and he asked, hey, that thing you said at the summit, you still good with that? I'm like, yeah, still good with that. But ultimately, I didn't trust Taylor at all. And of course, understandably, he was stealing all the food and burying it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So when you have these groups that have a fracture, you know, in them in terms of, like, from some of these early game tribal councils, then, you know, is it just the idea of, okay, look, we have no choice but to stick together at the merge?
Yeah. And you are just so, again, or maybe this is just me.
Like, but did the Gen X group, did the six of you guys have that conversation of, like, look, we did not get along in the past, but we need to stay six strong for now?
100%. Yeah. It's like, hey, we're good guys, right? Like, let's be friends and forget about that bald, weird guy. Forget about what he did.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, no, you definitely want to, we definitely had that conversation and then the game just gets uglier from there once you start turning on those people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, in terms of this group, do you have any predictions in terms of how you think it's going to shake out?
Yeah, I mean, I really like Dr. Mike. I really like Ryan, Chrissy, Ben, and Joe. Those are my favorite.
Give me that list one more time.
It's Dr. Mike, Ryan, Chrissy, Ben, Joe.
Okay.
Those are the people I feel most confident about.
You like them like as people on the show, or you like their chances?
Well, it's a mixture of both. I think that I don't know if Dr. Mike truly has a chance of winning, but I think I do relate to him so much that I think I'm rooting for him. And so maybe that's more just a likability factor. Mm-hmm. But Ryan certainly is a schemer. He's playing hard. I think he's playing well. And Joe is playing hard as well. Obviously he's ruffled a few feathers here and there, but, you know, I think in the beginning he got kind of like a, people thought he was just a Tony clone, but I feel like he's kind of coming into his own a bit. And Chrissy's super strategic. I really like her chances a lot. And Ben, he's super, super strong. The strike against Ben, I think, would be his story. You're not going to
too likable,
way too likable. And also you don't want a war veteran to make it to final three. Right. So I think there's a huge target on his back.
If Ben, you know, gets to a point in the game where, like, he gets to final four and they, you know, end up voting him out, like, look, we can't keep you around because of your story. Is that a point in the favor? Should Ben have come into the game and been, you know, I'm a rancher, I, you know, manage a supermarket, you know, should he have come in and said something? I mean, I know he's sort of like painted into a corner by the heroes, healers, and hustlers, but should he, you know, have come up with some other heroic job?
Possibly. Well, I don't know if he should come up with another heroic. Well, he is a hero.
But again, I mean, Chrissy is, with all due respect, an actuary. So
yeah,
it's
good point. Yeah.
You know, I work at a gas station. I guess I'm a hero for, you know, the people that don't know how to pump the gas.
It's tough because, like, you know, I'm not comparing myself to anybody who serves in the military, but I was worried about sharing whether or not I was a TV writer because I thought, well, who wants to give $1 million to someone who works in Hollywood? But at the same time, I thought, well, telling telling people that I work in TV, it might be interesting to them, and that'll help me like make early connections with people. So it's really this war between the beginning of the game and the end of the game, where things that are valuable at the beginning become like your biggest flaws at the end. Ultimately, I think it's good that he shared his story, because you want to be able to be yourself out there. Mm-hmm. And it's tough if you feel like you're playing a role, because you're already lying so much. At least as much as you can, don't lie about who you are.
Right. I do think that this sort of like meta conversation of like, okay, oh, well, who has a good story? You know, I think that, and obviously we saw that end up being a factor with Zeke in Game Changer. Also, I was like, oh, well, now our outlook on him is changed because his story is changed. So it'll be an interesting storyline for us to follow.
Yeah, for sure.
And for future survivors to really think about.
Yeah, no, it's true. Yeah, if you're at all, you know, if people prop you up and lift you up and, you know, worship you, yeah, don't advertise that.
Yeah, so it'll be fun to watch that. Okay, how many idols did you find in Millennials versus Gen X?
Two.
Only two. Okay.
Yeah. Only right. Two.
I was wondering because I talked about last night how because Joe has now found two. If Joe was to find one more idol, then he would tie the record that's held by Tony and Ty and one other player.
Yeah.
And I thought in my mind, I thought that you had had three potentially. And I said, oh, no, now I've insulted you.
No, not at all. Not kidding.
And you made a fake one. So you birthed the third idol into
the game. Yeah, 2.5, let's call it.
Call it 2.5. Now, you were able to, in Millennials versus Gen X, you found an idol early on, you played it for Jessica, and then you were able to quickly find another one right off the bat.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was easy for me, not easy, but easier for me because I knew how they were hidden organically in coconuts.
So you, like Joe, were armed with this information of, okay, I know what the gimmick is for hiding the clue or the idol in the given season, and you were able to sort of like double up. To me, it's almost like the going to search for the idol, and I know it's dangerous, but I almost feel like that the reward for looking for the idol has increased. Like, instead of like, you know, it used to be you would, you know, find an idol, but if you can like find an early idol, you're set up in a position to be able to find multiple idols in the season if you can figure out what the gimmick is in terms of, and we saw Ty last season where he found a clue to the idol and then was able to, you know, turn that into two idols.
Yeah. I mean, I've always been pro looking for idol. You should definitely not do it in front of people the way I did it, but it's why not? You know, there's ways to mask whether or not you're looking for it. You know, and Kelly Wentworth did that when she, you know, was pretending to get palm fronds or whatever, and you know, she found the idol that way. So yeah, look for it. Just don't be obvious about it, which sounds obvious, but it's a necessity, I think, if we're going deep in the game.
Yeah, because I mean, you have the ability to now not only have that one idol, but turn it into two. And now you also are armed with this information where that you were able to use so well in your season of like, okay, now I know how to set up a fake idol also,
yeah,
where now I can send somebody off and, you know, send Jay looking for a fake idol.
Yeah, and obviously, you know, strategically that he's less apt to look for another one on top of the fake one he's found. But if I'm being completely honest, I was just really having a lot of fun with it. I had planned to do
that.
You were
bored.
I was, well, yeah, what else are you going to do? It's right. Like, you know, why not have a little fun on the island? I was just so happy with how well
it
worked.
Do you think it's BS that they gave them a fake idol this season to use of like, here's an idol, okay, you use it for one day and now it's a fake idol?
Oh,
where you had to make your own fake idol.
Yeah, I've heard this point come up. I'm okay with whatever they throw at you. I would have loved to have had a real idol to, you know, that didn't have any power, and then I could, you know.
No, you had more fun making your own.
It was way more fun, and I feel like I can own that moment a little more than if you just have this idol that is valueless now. But certainly, it what a great thing to have.
Do you feel like a game changer in that sense where people, even last season, that one of the things that Debbie could have gotten from Cochran was a fake idol making kit?
Well, it's funny. I don't see how you turn down the extra vote, you know, in terms of the three choices she had. But, you know, not to get too meta or the TV of it all, but at the same time, it would be really cool to have a fake idol and have a lot of fun with that. So I still think she made the right choice, even though I believe that ended up not impacting the vote at all, or at least who went home.
Okay. Let's talk about the fake idol. You had a very specific reason why you used the fake idol in Millennials versus Gen X. You got to the final six. Jay was a big threat. You were worried he was going to find a real idol potentially after he incorrectly played it, I think, at the previous night's tribal council. So to keep him from finding the real idol, you put the fake idol out there, which I think was, you know, very ingenious. And I'm not sure if anybody else has ever quite used a fake idol like that.
I want to say... Well, yeah, I mean, the Aussie's terrible idol. Like, he didn't someone find that? Or I don't remember, but...
It was unclear what the motive was, but Ozzy had the real idol and then put a fake idol out there. But I think that really it was, as far as Ozzy thought was, this will be hilarious.
Yeah, well, you know, I got really scared, because so I made that idol, I planted it, and I knew that Jay had found it. But then later, Jay and Adam had found my paintbrushes that I used because I was just so tired. I was up all night, and I thought I buried them in the sand, but it's dark. You can't see anything. And so I guess I had accidentally left the paintbrushes kind of sticking out of the sand. And I thought as soon as I heard that they had found those paintbrushes that Jay was going to realize that what he had in his hands was fake. But
put two and two together.
Fortunately, no, he didn't. And by the way, I woke up that morning covered in pink paint, which is what I painted the coconut with. So I had to run to the well and wash off like Lady Macbeth or something.
That's funny. So what could Chrissy do with this fake idol now at the merge? Is there a way that she could use it to her advantage in this particular scenario?
Yeah, I mean, she's got two options. She can either three, I guess. She can either give it to someone, or she can share the information that she has it to build trust, or, you know, like I did, she could leave it out for someone to find so that they really think that they have an idol and think that they're safe, when in fact, of course, they wouldn't be, and that would be who you would target. I mean, that's who you'd want to, as best you could, manipulate things in such a way that the person you want to find it finds it rather than someone else.
Mm-hmm.
I was always worried about that when I did my idol. I'm like, God, man, if Ken finds this idol, that's just, this is not going to do anything for me.
Well, I mean, what do you think she should do of those options?
I think, you know, given that we're going into a merge, and I think it would paint too big a target on her back to share it with anyone. So I think I would try
share
to
the information.
Share the information, yeah. So I think what I would do is I would plant it for someone to find, and, you know, but know who you want to find it and make sure that that's how it goes down.
Mm-hmm. So there's somebody who's out searching for idols, and then plant that idol at the point where, now, one of the things that you did with your idol, because I talked to Jay on the podcast a couple of weeks back, was that you actually had the note from the hidden immunity idol that you found earlier this season, and then you put the note in with the fake hidden immunity idol, which really sold the authenticity of it to somebody who had already had a fake or had an immunity idol in that season. And so I don't know if Chrissy has that. So in terms of, if somebody was to find that fake idol without a note, would they buy that it was a real idol?
Well, I guess the only reason they would is that it does look so real, and because it was.
It should come with a note.
It should come with a note for sure. But at the same time, you're also like aware that Survivor's constantly changing things up, and like, well, maybe they didn't put a note with it because they want me to be unsure of it being real, or they want people to be unsure of me, and, you know, all the stakes that come with that. But yes, it, ideally it would have a note. And by the way, like, you know, so Jay has the note still to this day. I've never ever asked him for it back. I feel like that I can't do that, but I really want it back for as a memento.
Maybe he's listening.
Yeah. Well, Jay, you can keep it.
Now you want it. Come on.
I do want it.
All right. Somebody sort of like subtweet to
note
to Jay that David would like his note back.
Yeah. No, we're going to Fiji next month. So maybe I'll just ask for it then.
What do you guys guys going to do in Fiji?
I have no idea. It's going to be me, Jay, and Adam. I've really pulled back in terms of the planning of it all. I'm just going to go with the flow and see whatever they want to do.
I feel like you're like the, you know, one of these things is not like the other in the group.
I definitely am. Yeah. What am I doing in that group? And really,
you, Jay, and Adam.
Yeah.
Jay, just, are you going to go out for steak? Yeah. Just like that final six reward challenge.
It's not a bad idea. Yeah, it is. It is. It's that reward challenge reunion. And I just remembered, by the way, Michelle will also be there. She's a late addition, but she's coming too.
Okay.
Yeah. So I still stick out.
Yes. So you can hang with that group?
Probably not. No, they're great. There's no animosity between me, Jay, Michelle, or Adam.
Forget
whatsoever.
Animosity. I feel like that those guys are going to be like out late and partying.
Oh, yeah, I have my nights.
Okay. All right. Look at you.
I try.
Look at you, David Wright. Wow. And so, all right, just going back to Chrissy with this fake idol one more time. I think that she's in a little bit of a compromised situation in terms of sharing the information with people. Because I think in a perfect world, she'd find this and it's like, okay, this is a fake idol. But it for as far as everybody's concerned, you can show it to people. But she does. I mean, did Ryan tell her that Devin knows about it? And so it's like, oh boy, a couple people know about it. So in terms of like, if that information ultimately starts to seep into sort of like the news and gossip on the island, then it becomes, you know, more and more ineffective with everybody that she ultimately is able to, like, it's a weird spot and a weird thing for her to have if she is potentially in the majority alliance.
Yeah, it becomes Chrissy does have a fake idol.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then suddenly, yeah, it's has no value whatsoever.
Yeah. And then also then that information starts to become, what if somebody tells Ben, hey, did you know Chrissy has a fake idol this whole time?
Yeah.
And so, you know, that all of these, every single one of these little things could end up turning into the thing that like makes you win or makes you lose the game.
And that's what makes it so frustrating, because it could be something so small or some one conversation that you had that you shouldn't have had, or you should have had it in a different way. And there's no way to know what the right thing to do is in the moment. You just have to kind of go with your gut.
So I wanted to ask you about something that happened in the episode in the early going last night, where we saw that Dr. Mike went out, he caught the fish, and then you were impressed.
Very impressed. Very impressed. Are you kidding? That's really hard to do out there.
Yes. And so he caught the fish and he brought it back. And Ben was talking about how Dr. Mike, he caught this tiny fish. He offered everybody a bite of this tiny fish. Whereas here's Cole. He brings back these, you know, decent sized fish, and he doesn't share it with anybody. He eats it all himself. And Ben says you could tell a lot about him as a player. That's not somebody that I want to work with, the person that's not sharing fish with other people. Do you feel like that is Ben on to something? Is there some wisdom of the fishes?
100%, except I guess there's a, you know, devil's advocate. I guess you could say that, well, that's a good person to sit next to, because everybody can see that they're not very good at this social part of this game and maybe will not think that they're deserving of, you know, Soul Survivor.
Well, let's forget social part of the game, because social part of the game speaks to me like, oh, they're doing this because they know it looks good. That's why they're sharing the fish. But in terms of like that, can you trust the person more that is going to share the fish?
Well, I think you can. I don't think, you know, you actually can. But, you know, food is such an emotional trigger out there. As I said, when Taylor buried our food and I found that out, and then I got back from the game and I was snapping at a friend for stealing a sandwich. You definitely, that you just have to always like share. And we were so careful to make sure that everybody was eating the same portions of food, and it didn't always happen, but we were always like mindful that, you know, everybody is kind of like keeping tabs and an accounting of who's getting what and eating what. And I think Cole is very much playing, at least in that way, like Taylor, and Taylor didn't make it to the end. So that's something to think about.
So are these guys who are sort of like these bigger guys at a real disadvantage in the game in terms of like, one, you have that they just like, you know, scientifically, their bodies need more calories. And you know, I've picked on Cole as much as anybody. This is the one forum where I could possibly do that. but, you know, he obviously, you know, that we saw last night, he ends up having this episode where, you know, he ends up, you know, passing out that from just like a lack of nourishment, obviously, like that his body is consuming more calories than, say, you know, yours or mine would be out there. But there is this idea of, no, everybody has the same portion of food. Even a guy like Taylor, who, I mean, I have not had any like personal encounters with Taylor, but I imagine that that maybe not to the degree that Cole is, but I think that he probably requires more sustenance. Here he is, and now everybody's getting mad at him. Is it just a communication issue? Are these guys like not articulating that, hey, I you know, if I could eat a little bit more, I think I can help us win more? And they're sort of like demanding or taking without asking.
Yeah, I mean, you know, even communicating that, like, that is a good idea, but at the same time, I don't know. I always felt like everybody should get the same share no matter what, because like, you come in with the body you come in with. You can either put on weight in advance or not. And of course, the TV of it all affects it, because I think people are less inclined to come in as a little fat, right? I put on 6 pounds, which ended up not being enough. But yeah, and the problem is, yeah, these bodybuilding guys or these muscular guys, they just have almost no body fat. You do burn muscle, but it doesn't give you as much energy as fat does. And so, yeah, Ken ran into it. They run into like a wall where they just can't, there's no energy. And yes, they do need more calories, but I just feel like, forget about all of that. Forget about having to have those conversations just before you go out there. Just drink milkshakes each night. That's what I did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're in a tough spot, because when Survivor is looking at these guys, you know, they want the, you know, hot guys on the show. So I don't think that they necessarily want, you know, said hot guys to get fat, but, you know.
Well, said hot guy will be hot again after 10 days anyway out there.
Right. I would say, you know, don't worry so much about like looking hot on day one. You know, just hang in there and, you know, try to, like, from the time they tell you you're on the show, then eat as much as you can. Don't worry about like what the end result is going to look like.
Even if it's Fijian pizza, because that's the worst pizza that exists.
Is it?
It's the RC Cola of pizza.
Leave RC out of this, David.
Sorry, they're a sponsor.
No. But I recall that I feel like that from that, the, like, don't they have like some sort of like floating pizzeria in Fiji?
Yeah, well, unfortunately,
is that not from there?
No, that pizza probably is from there. I didn't get to go on that reward, but I heard from people who did that, yeah, the pizza was just kind of rubbery. The cheese tastes a little weird. The bread's not, like, I mean, don't get me wrong, you're grateful to have it,
yeah.
But yeah, it's not the best.
Not the best.
And by the way, what was that that Cole said after he fainted? It was, there's some really weird...
I'll pull that sound clip. But he did say something, and I was like, "Wait, who said that?"
Yeah. He's like, "You don't do that to do that," or something. It was nonsensical, obviously, because he was losing his mind.
This came up on the Know It All. Some people said that he faked that to get food.
I don't think so. Either. No way. Yeah.
So going back to this tribal council that we saw last night, where we ended up in sort of like this like heads up situation, and the same thing with the episode before, where it was Rourke versus Chrissy last time around. Then this week it was Allie versus JP. So you were in this spot where it was going to be either you or Cece who was going to go home. And you were able to work your way out of it, even though, you know, there was some active campaigning going on at that tribal council by the aforementioned Michelle.
Yeah.
Can you talk us through how you were feeling and some of the things that you had done to make sure it wasn't going to be you?
Well, I mean, you know, I had a lot of conversations with Michelle and Chris. And ultimately, you know, not to throw Cece under the bus right now, but, I was not obviously in peak physical form, and I don't think I was offering a lot in the challenges, other than maybe some of the puzzle stuff. Although up to that point, I can't remember. But Cece, I love her to death. But in that moment in time on that beach, she was really not bringing it. So I felt pretty good that like it was Cece then me. I remember feeling pretty confident that things were going to go that way at Tribal. So I wasn't all that concerned. But I do remember Michelle saying, I think we should vote out David. I'm like, oh, this is great. but it worked out almost.
Okay. When there was the Dalton Ross, top 35 greatest, moments from the, survivors that, our own Jessica Lewis mentioned that during the monsoon that afterwards you guys had to all huddle around Cece's butt because that was the only source of warmth on the island. Is that a true statement? Do you recall this?
Yeah, no, I do. I recall that. That's one of the most memorable moments from the game for me. We were all like
on Cece's butt.
It's true though. Like we were all just huddled because the rain was coming down. It was like going down the palm fronds and down our shirts. And we're leaning on Cece for warmth. And Chris Hammonds puts his head in my lap, which it wasn't weird because it's like, oh, thank God his head is so warm. And
Chris's head and Cece's butt combined.
Yeah.
To be this heat pump for the Gen X group.
Warmest place on earth. Yeah, it was that night. If I was ever going to quit, it was going to be that night. It was so hard. And then we didn't sleep at all the entire night. And then it's kind of what led to my paranoia because finally in the morning, the rain went away and we could sleep. And I woke up, I looked up and Chris and Paul were having a very private, secret conversation above me. And then, of course, I got paranoid and, well, you saw what happened after that.
Mm-hmm. Then you went off to go look for the idol.
Yeah, that was it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. In front of everyone.
I commented on the know-it-alls last night how much I really enjoyed this challenge. Was this a challenge that you guys did in Millennials versus Gen X?
The immunity challenge.
Yes.
No. And I actually really love this. John Kerhofer and his challenge team are like really bringing it this challenge. I thought that was a really fun one to watch. And I actually would love to play that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I actually did it at the EW Pop Fest that they had, and I actually got a chance to like play and like so like you yeah. know feel. And I was just like, okay, I was just going super slow motion, and a girl who was playing against me, she ended up like smoking me. Like I was like, well, I felt like that from watching it on TV. My strategy was like, okay, well, I'm just not going to let my blocks fall down. Everybody, you know, I've seen everybody else, you know, and that was how Sydney ended up winning this in Koh Rong, where everybody always tips their tower over. And my strategy was just like, okay, well, I'll just never let my tower fall. It doesn't matter how long it takes me, but I'm just going to build this tower once. And the girl just, her thing never fell down. So.
Were you humiliated?
No, not at all. I mean, of my many humiliations, that's like not even in the top 1,000. So,
I want to see that list.
Yeah, I'll work on that. That'll be a podcast series that will start. But no, I really did. I thought that this was great because it was so fun because one of the things that really appeals to me in these tribal challenges before the merge is I love that anybody could be the GOAT. And yeah. It could really end up changing things up to me where, you know, it could be all on one person who makes you lose.
Yeah, for sure. And by the way, if anyone makes you lose, it's like, yeah, that guy.
And also, it's the kind of thing where you could have somebody like a tribe is like way out in front. And sometimes these challenges get boring because there's like one tribe is so far behind that it's not even close. But it doesn't matter in this challenge how far ahead you are because the whole thing could come toppling down, as we saw with Yawa. So yeah, I think it's just a really great design to have all of the individual responsibility where one person could ruin it for the group. And then you also could have like a big lead change, you know, very quickly where everything could end up, being completely different.
Yeah, it's fantastic. So much fun to watch.
Yeah. What else from the season are you enjoying?
I mean, you know, I love the characters that I like a lot, you know, I just enjoying watching them and watching their journey again, like, kind of all in on Dr. Mike, whether or not that's, the right pick or not, I don't know. But, yeah, it's, I think the season kind of started off a little slow for me, but I really think after, especially last night, or this last episode, that it's really kind of the pace is starting to pick up.
Okay. Now, you're a Survivor veteran. You have now been through the show. You've been able to watch the show as a fan for a long time, and now you have a keen eye when you're watching the series. Are you noticing anything different now when you're watching the show?
You know, it's funny. Well, for me, what's weird about watching the show is just that it seems like, even though it's three tribes, it seems like a bizarro version of our season, Millennials versus Gen X, because it's all the same beaches, and I do see myself in Dr. Mike and Ryan. So I almost feel like Millennials versus Gen X actually never happened, and this is the alternate universe, and this is what that season ended up being.
Wow. All right, then what else are you seeing?
Well, I'm seeing some not safe for network TV shots. Ryan's underwear is unfortunate, and I got hit in the eye, I think, as did the rest of America. But, I mean, good on him.
So this is something that the RHAP B&B has talked about this a great deal, that it seems as though this season the Survivor players have not gotten their bathing suits. It seems as though that in the past, Survivor players, they tend to start in the clothes that they're wearing, are in underwear for a while, and at some point, Jeff says, all right, guys, here's your bathing suits.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we got our underwear. I mean, we got our bathing suits before the swap happened. So
right.
And it's great.
Yeah, so it was right before the swap. Here we are heading into the merge. These Survivor players still do not have bathing suits. They're just in underwear. Do you think that they will get them? Do you think that this is the new normal?
God, I hope so. I mean,
you hope it's the new normal.
Well, no. I mean, I hope they get them soon. Really, for their sake. No, I don't. I you know, it's kind of. I feel bad for anybody that has to walk around on national television in their underwear. I mean, it's not very flattering.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But yeah, this probably.
For some people, it is flattering.
Well, yeah, actually, yes, for certain. I don't feel very flattering in my underwear.
Yeah. Okay. So you were happy that in your season you guys got the bathing suits.
God, yes. Yeah, it was awful. Yeah. I hated walking around like that.
Well, and another thing that the RHAPB B&B has been really on top of also is that there used to be more blurring going on in, especially like men's underwear blurring that was happening. And that's not happening anymore either.
No, it's not. And I mean, you know, for me, they only needed a couple pixels. But yeah, it's...
I watched a secret scene with Dr. Mike where he ends up getting stung by the bee. Or stuck by the wasp, and there was like a ridiculous amount of blurring in areas that I don't think should be blurred. I don't follow, like, his stomach was blurred. I don't know what was going on.
Well,
there
maybe he keeps his penis in a different place.
I don't know. I'm not sure exactly what was going on there, if he has like swear words tattooed, but there was like, it's like, boy, is this like unnecessary blurring? I'm not sure what's happening. I'm not sure what is being blurred.
Random blurring. Maybe it was like leftover from the scene before.
I don't know if there's like different like practices for secret scenes on the website as opposed to what's on the TV show. But that, I thought that was really bizarre.
Strange.
Yeah. All right. So I want to get into some questions here with you. Let me just thank our sponsor for this episode of the podcast. Those are friends over at Canvas People. I think you would like this, David.
I've actually bought two of these before.
You
and
have.
I love them.
Yes.
Yeah, I bought them as gifts.
Canvas People, what they do is that they turn your photos into beautiful canvas works of art. They've got a great offer code for you to try it out. Go to canvaspeople.com, use the promo code RHAP, upload your photo, and they will give you special $0 pricing for your print and let you try it out. You got to pay the shipping. Comes to about $20, but this is a great gift idea that, believe it or not, the holidays are around the corner, but it's not too early to get the jump on this secret Santa. This is a great idea to check it out. Nicole and I have done this a couple times with pictures of the boys. They come out looking great. You got all these pictures on your phone. You post them on Facebook, Instagram, and then what? Then like 5 years later, says, hey, do you want to post this picture again? No. Instead, you could put it on your wall. You could look at it every day. It's a great gift item and really is, they come out really, really nice. Normally, these go for $69.99 plus the shipping, but you get that special $0 pricing with the promo code RHAP. So go to canvaspeople.com, upload your photo, promo code RHAP, select the 11 by 14 size to get that special offer. That's at canvaspeople.com, promo code RHAP, canvaspeople.com, promo code RHAP. All right. So let's give you some of these questions. These are via email and then from in the patron Facebook group. This is a question from Sadie, who wants to know about how Stephen and I were talking on the Know-It-Alls about regaining someone's trust after you betrayed them on a vote. I want to get David's perspective on this. In Millennials versus Gen X, David would reassure Brett, Sunday, and Chris that he would do something and then did the opposite. For example, he betrayed them by voting out Paul, but was able to reassure them only to go against them to save Jess with the idol. Once again, he rebuilt trust at the merge until he needed to act against them, like when he orchestrated voting out Chris. What does David think is the best way to socially and strategically rebuild trust, however temporarily, after a betrayal?
I mean, there's really no general rule or advice I could give. It's really...
So first of all, do you accept these charges?
I accept the charges.
You're guilty as charged.
I mean, and not to take... I don't want to take too much credit, too, because, I mean, it, post-merge, I don't think people were worried about me too much. So once we got to the merge, it didn't matter as much. But in any case, it's about whatever personal connections you have with people. And that is the icky lying of it all, too, you know, but you, whatever bonds you have, you got to re-up them. And you have to also, you know, point out the things, the threats that you think, need to be eliminated. And then sometimes you have to go against your word and vote out the other person. But it's a tricky game. I there's no general advice I could give anybody. It's just case dependent, depending on what people you're surrounded by.
Okay. Do you then say to people, like, do you explain your moves, like, logically in terms of, like, okay, this is why I did what I did? Or are you better off the explaining things emotionally of, okay, well, I had to vote against Paul because he was mean to me? Or, like, which is more, people are going to be more forgiving of you because you acted emotionally or because you acted super logically?
I think actually acting super logically is the best way. And I think, like, you know, just to take it back to this after tribal conversation that we saw between Allie and Ryan, yes, you need to talk about why you did what you did, and you need to explain yourself, but you can't do it in a heated way. You have to be calm, and yeah, speak to the logic of it for your own game, and talk about, hey, please don't take this personally. It's just a game. It's just game stuff. And we had that in our season in spades where people really just respected, that it was a game, and nobody, for the most part, took anything too personally. There are a couple instances where that wasn't the case, but for the most part, everybody saw the game as the game. So as long as you could, like, make a case logically why you did what you did, I felt like that kind of freed you up a little bit.
See, that's interesting to me, because I think that my impulse would have been to say that it would be easier to regain the trust if you came out and said that it was an emotional reason of, Paul was so mean to me, I had to vote him out. That was why I went against you. I have nothing against you guys, but I couldn't work with him. He was the person. Whereas I wonder that, and my thinking would be that to say, like, okay, well, my logic is that if I couldn't work with you guys, it's like, well, now I'm coming off as threatening, as opposed to, well, I'm just a baby and my feelings got hurt, that's why I went against you.
Well, I would say, like, you know, I idled out Lucy, and the reason I did that and the explanation I gave, and it was the legit explanation, is and I think this is the logical explanation, where I couldn't trust her because she would only give me so much information, and I would ask her for more information, and she would say to my face, I'm not going to give you that. So once someone is saying that they're not going to give you information, well, then you can't trust them, nor can you work with them going forward. So I don't see that as an emotional reason why she got voted out. I think that's a very logical reason, and people understood that. But yeah, I guess if you're being bullied, there is some sympathy that you'll get for voting out that person.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Here's a question from Tim, who writes in and wants to know, do you see any similarities between JP in this season and Ken in Millennials versus Gen X? Do you see a way for JP to adjust his game after the merge so he doesn't just become another player who gets to the end with no votes because his game was purely physical?
Yeah, I mean, I think that is the spot that JP finds himself in. We'll see how far he gets, but he definitely, the perception anyway, whether real or not, but what we've been given to see, it looks like JP is not really playing this game, and he's, you know, eating more food than he should. And yeah, I worry about his chances.
Is JP eating the food too? I know he's eating tri-tip salads on the beach.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Who eats a salad on a beach, David? isn't a beach the worst place in the world to eat a salad?
I think so. Yeah, yeah. That's his first date, right? He's got a bonfire on the beach and a tri-tip salad.
Does it have
salad?
To be tri-tip? What if she wants chicken Caesar?
Yeah, I feel like there should be options.
Yeah,
I don't. But yeah, no, maybe he's not eating more food. But yeah, I
like a good salad. Believe me.
Oh, sure. Yeah, and you got your protein in there,
right?
But no, I
don't want sand in there.
I think he's certainly the perception, anyway, is that he's not playing the game, and so that's going to be a problem for him if it stays that way.
But to me, I don't see him as a Ken, because, and again, obviously you were there, you know Ken way better than I do, apparently, but I would say that to me that Ken, that he was like, I almost feel like that he was like very specific about what he wanted and very principled in, like, he wanted to work with people who are, and like JP to me is just like, I don't care. Well, whatever, you know, and it's almost like he's like a bump on a log. Whereas I feel like that Ken was like very specific, like he wanted people to talk to him a certain way and interact with him a certain way. And if he wasn't getting that from people, he didn't want to work with them. But, you know, JP is like, just, you know, he'll go with, you know, okay, I'm with you guys, okay, fine, whatever.
Yeah, that's true. Ken made us so nervous when he went to give Will a test. It's like, what test? No, he's already gonna vote with us. Mm-hmm. Don't test him.
Yeah, JP's not giving a test to anybody.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a good point. So there's a difference. There's a significant difference.
Yeah. I mean, he like just basically said to Ryan, you know, whatever you guys want to do.
Yeah, right, yeah. So I'll do it, fine.
He's fine. Even like, you know, hey, you have an idol on? You have an idol in your pants? Like, you know, fine, I'll just take off my pants, whatever it is.
Right, but not a great case for Soul Survivor, unfortunately, for him.
No, I don't think so. I really felt like that Jeff was getting frustrated with him at that. I mean, I think that Jeff was frustrated with JP from the first Tribal Council, like, just listening to, like, in First One Out, in terms of, like, Jeff's reaction to, you know, after that first Tribal, where Jeff seemed taken aback that JP was not even getting worked up, where it looked like, you know, that there had been all these accusations made about him by Alan. I think Jeff was frustrated that JP was not really defending himself at that first Tribal Council.
Well, and this last Tribal Council, I think a bit of the same. I think Jeff was kind of a bit blowing up JP's game by saying, like, you know, you're just,
yeah,
you know,
and he was trying to do it in like the nicest way possible. Yeah. He's like, JP, I gotta hand it to you, because you're just sitting there and you're giving me nothing, and that's great, because you're just showing everybody, like, hey, like, I'm this confident, and you're intentionally giving me nothing, like, and I don't think it was an intentional thing, but, you know, that he just will, you could say whatever you want about him, and he's like, okay, well, if that's what you think, then that's your opinion, and I guess it'll be a wake-up call for me if I get voted out. Like, yeah, it will be.
For sure. Yeah, he was just kind of flatlining up there, but he made it.
Okay. All right. This is from Aaron from Virginia. David and Rob, you played in the 2 and the 3 tribe formats. This is the first time we started and stayed in 3 tribes until the merge. What are your thoughts on the new pre-merge format? And again, that Survivor does, like, this does not mean Survivor 36 is going to be anything like this. You say thumbs up on 3 tribes into 3 tribes?
Well, I'm 2 minds of that. Thumbs up on 3 tribes in terms of the TV of it. way thumbs down in terms of being a player in a game like that, because there's just fewer targets.
Is it more luck-based, do you feel like? Because I've come around where I feel like that bigger tribes favor the person who, I think there's less luck involved if you're on like a big 10-person, 12-person tribe. So do you feel like, and I say 12 person because I watched the pre-merge of Australian Survivor, but that to me, it feels like the real big personality sort of like start to emerge and you have a lot of room to be able to do stuff. As somebody who was sort of like in danger early on in a 10-person tribe, do you buy that luck has less to do with it in a 10-person tribe?
Well, I would say that it's a lot easier to hide in a 10-person tribe. Not that I did that, but that was entirely my own fault. I think in a 18 people, 6-person tribe, it's I would be really nervous. It's like, you know, it's like a swap tribe. Like there, you don't have the numbers, and it's like there's a huge target on all of our backs because there just aren't that many people.
This is an exercise I'm going to do. I want to look at all of like the first boots from tribes that are like 8 or more people on one side, and then look at the list of boots that are people from like 6-person tribes in a season, and see, you know, ultimately like where the stronger players lie.
Yeah, that's interesting. I'd love to know what you find.
Yeah, because I do think that obviously that there are more options for people. So that I think that you could potentially have a better player picked off in a group of 6 in the first vote, because there's just fewer options. Where in a group of 10, you know, chances are like there's likely to be somebody who is a, you know, a bigger sore thumb than you are.
Yeah. I will say the other side of it, though, is because 2 tribes win immunity, you do walk into immunity challenges, feeling a little bit more confident.
Right. You have a greater chance of going to a tribal council, but you have less of a chance of actually going home if you went to a tribal council.
The reverse of that, I think, actually, right? You have a greater chance of not going to a tribal council, but a greater chance of going home if you do go to a tribal council.
I think we're saying the same thing, okay. But just from the perspective of the okay. 2 tribes or the 3 tribes.
Gotcha.
But,
gotcha. Yes.
I think we're on the same page.
Yes, we are.
Okay. Got some questions from Facebook. This is a question that I had for you. Do you have a nickname? I feel like you need a nickname.
Do I? What would my nickname be? I don't think it'd be very flattering.
Well, do you have a nickname outside of Survivor?
I don't. I go by Dave. I go by David. Professors called me John. It's really annoying. People can call me whatever
Why
they want.
Why did professors call you John?
It's my first name, so I never bothered correcting them.
So John, your first name is actually John, not David?
Yeah.
That's interesting. So why are you David?
I would rather my parents had named me David John, but they named me John David. And then from when I was a baby, he called me David. So it's really annoying when you fill out forms and it's like first name, middle initial. It's like, but you know,
so you're, does anybody call you JD?
No, don't get that.
Okay.
See, actually, oftentimes people call me by my full name, or not all of it, but they'll say David Wright, rather than just Dave or David.
Yeah, I tend to say that.
It's fine. It's
yeah. Okay. and you don't have a nickname of, nobody has a nickname for you.
No, but it seems like somebody really wants me to have a nickname.
I like when you have a nickname. It'd be fun, like here's, you know, David Wright, you know, we'll come up with something.
Yeah. Well, I feel like they're thinking this weirdo must totally have a nickname.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, I'll work on it. I'll come up with one.
We'll work on that. Okay. Stephanie Bourgeois wants to know, on a scale of 1 to 10, how full is the bladder right now?
What, right now in this moment?
Right
oh, because
now.
Of the match game. Very
yeah.
good. Oh, God, that was embarrassing. I feel really bad about that. No, bladder's fine. I finished this glass of water, but I think I'll be okay.
Do you need more water?
No, I'm perfect.
Okay.
Yeah, I feel really bad about walking
off stage.
Because
on a scale of 1 to 10, your glass is filled to 0 now.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, no, I really felt bad about leaving the stage. That's like, you're not supposed to do that. But
talk about the match game. Did you have fun? Was it like what you expected?
I had a lot of fun. I had a ton of fun. And actually ended up meeting my girlfriend that night. So thank you for that. So hello, Leah. Anything I say that's smart or insightful tonight or today, I probably stole from her.
Okay. All right. Well, this is very exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good.
Yeah. I was worried during that night that you guys weren't having fun. I was very concerned.
I was having fun. Yeah. No, I had a blast.
Okay. John John wants to know, does David see Devin and Ryan as a David and Ken type duo?
100%. I thought that immediately. For whatever part of me is in Ryan, I saw a lot of Ken and Devin.
Alex wants to know, can Joe deflect the target that's bound to be placed on him at the merge for already playing an idol successfully for himself pre-merge? How was David able to escape that after he played an idol for Jessica in Millennials versus Gen X? So is there a stigma that's on a person moving forward, or is it that, okay, oh, this guy, he could play an idol. He's dangerous. Maybe we should go for somebody else.
That's it. I mean, there's a couple things. I mean, you are afraid to target anybody who has an idol, and then eventually it becomes too late, and then suddenly you're sitting next to them at Final Three. But yeah, the trick is to make that person think that they're safe. And so, or rather target someone else, but make the other person as the idol think that they're not safe. They burn the idol and then you get them out the next vote. But, the other thing too, at least in my case, you know, there was this weird tale going around that, on the island during the swap tribes.
A rumor.
That I wanted to vote out Lucy and then played an idol. That I wanted to vote out Jessica and then played my idol on to save her. But no, I was always all about voting out Lucy. And so the perception, at least during all the rumors that happened during the swap tribes, was that I made this super, super dumb move. And so I think people's perception of me was, maybe not the same as people's perception of Joe. So as far as Joe's spot, I don't know what's going to happen. I think it's going to be tough for him, but I'm rooting for him too, because he's so much fun to watch.
Give me a prediction for Joe. Do you think that he ends up flaming out early on in this merge, or do you think that he is going to, end up being one of these like last four or five people in the game?
Joe, if you're listening, I love you, but I think you're going to flame out.
Yeah, I don't see the path for him. And believe me, I'm rooting for him to go far in this game, because I think that he's electric on the show. But I'm really down on the healers moving forward. The only healer, I think if I was going to do like healer power rankings, and why not? I'll do it right now. I think I have Dr. Mike number one. Because he's the person that's made the most inroads with Ben and Lauren in terms of talking with them about potentially voting out Cole. I think that he's the one that could survive, you know, voting against Cole and Jessica. I think that Jessica is probably guilty by association with Cole. Like, I could even see a scenario where Cole wins immunity at this first tribal council after the merge and Jessica gets voted out. And then, I almost feel like that Desi might be number two in terms of like who's going to worry about her. And then, you know, if she doesn't get picked off first at the merge, is the other scenario. Like I think she has a chance to go home, but if not, then I just think that they might forget about her. And then I think I might have Joe three out of that group, Jessica four, and Cole five.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, and Dr. Mike, you know, despite catching a tiny fish, I think he's probably perceived as being a little clumsy. So I don't think people are going to be really worried about him winning any individual immunity challenges. So, and again, I think he's really likable and has a good social game. So I feel really good about him.
Yeah, I do feel like that coming into the merge, I feel like a healer is going to go home this week. And then almost like, you know, a game of pool. I think that then there'll be like some sort of a, like the healers are going to scatter. And then I think then we'll see that group of that like bigger alliance end up getting too heavy and then cracking under its own like weight, and well, then going into two separate groups.
Somebody thinks they're on the bottom, right? And mm-hmm. and somebody knows they are. So yeah, I that's a good prediction.
Okay. John John wants you to explain what you wrote in the Dalton Ross article about the Shawshank Redemption, that you said your greatest moment on Survivor. You said it was night 37. We were waiting to walk into tribal council. Suddenly, from the darkness of the Fijian jungle, drifted the sound of a choir, like that scene in The Shawshank Redemption. I was instantly hypnotized, as I hadn't heard any music in over a month. Somewhere inside that harmony was a peaceful feeling of togetherness. I felt entirely present in a way that I have never felt before or since. Okay. David, so I actually got a couple people asked me about this. What was this, a sort of out of body experience? Was there music playing? What was going on?
There actually was a choir singing, so it wasn't in my head.
Is this apocryphal?
No, it really happened. We were waiting to go to tribal, and to be without music for so long, I didn't think that it would mean anything to me, but then I hear this choir and it was unbelievable. Brett actually got up and just kind of, like, he was like hypnotized. He just kind of walked towards it, and we never saw the villagers, but it was this beautiful thing. And then eventually when I got voted out and I ended up in Ponderosa, I put my iPod in and I could listen to music, and I heard songs that I'd heard 1,000 times in the most amazingly fresh new way. Like Sound of Silence by Simon and Garfunkel sounds amazing after you've been without music for 38 days, and unfortunately after 2 or 3 days you become desensitized to it again, and that magical feeling goes away, and you're back to just it, everything's just noise.
Yeah, the thing that is really hard to describe to somebody who hasn't been through the survivor experience is just the sensory deprivation, and then what it's like to sort of like turn those systems back on after the fact. I mean, and you could do it. You could do it in your real life of like try. I know, like I've heard of people that go on like sort of like 10-day, that I listened to sometimes, the Tim Ferriss podcast. I think Tim Ferriss was like going like somewhere where he's like not going to talk for 2 weeks or something. Wow. Like that. But, you know, you could just, you know, in your own life, just like not do a thing for a long time. And then it's really weird when you do it again.
It's nuts. It's nuts. Yeah. And I was so grateful for really that moment. That was the best.
Yeah. Okay. John Tinkham wants to know, according to IMDb, you played secret security agent Jones Pete Allison in a 2003 TV movie called Cruel Deception. What were the challenges of playing a secret security agent, and do any pictures or videos exist of you in this role?
The biggest challenge is getting IMDb to take away credits that aren't actually yours. I've been trying for years to get that.
This was not you.
It's not me. No. And I contact them directly. I'm like, will you please like take that off my IMDb page? It's not me.
It's a different David.
Yeah.
Ryan.
Yeah. But I'm sure I was great in it.
John Tinkham also wants to know, what is the origin of the nickname Pete of Secret Security Agent Jones, quote unquote, Pete Allison? How about Pete as a nickname?
Yeah, Pete's great. I love that. Yeah, that's my new nickname now for that role I played.
What about Secret Security Agent Jones Pete Allison?
Yeah, I like that.
That is pretty good. Amanda wants to know, does David think that he represents a new player archetype of the older male superfan, and is Dr. Mike the new David Wright?
Oh, wow, that's interesting. Well, there's your hot take, right? To be honest, I mean, I think Dr. Mike, me, Ryan, we all represent a version of Cochran, who represents a version of Fishback, who represents a version of you, Rob. So I think we're all
right. But I do think that there's an important like delineation here of like, I think there's two things, and where Cochran was like, for lack of a better term, he was, here's the nerdy super fan kid that thinks he knows how to play this game. Let's see what happens. Let's give him this chance at dream fulfillment. I think that Ryan is more of that thing. But then I also think that there is this second thing of, here is sort of like this, professional person who has, that has a career and has been able to do some things in their life outside. Like, whereas you're sort of getting with a Cochran or with a Ryan, like, here's somebody who's like just out of college, or somebody who is sort of like at the start of their sort of adult life and now is sort of like going out on their first adventure. But here's somebody who is more of an accomplished adult and has had success in their field. Now, can they translate how they were able to have success in their field into this other new challenge of Survivor, which is certainly out of their element?
Yeah, that's a fair point. And certainly, like, the older you are, the more life experience you have, and you can bring that to the game, where if you just graduated college, you don't really have a lot that you can talk about other than like the fun Kager you went to last week. But
because I feel like Dr. Mike is on this similar arc, where it was like that you were certain this fish out of water who is finding as you did, found yourself out there and then ended up becoming sort of like the center of all of this, you know, a lot of the gameplay that was going on.
Yeah. And you know, despite Dr. Mike being cast, I think going forward, we're going to see the casting skew younger. So I don't know that there will be many more Dr. Mikes and David Wrights and whoever else you can lump in there. But I appreciate it. I think I got lucky that I was on a season that was generational and basically old versus young. So I think that's how it kind of snuck in.
Yeah. Okay. David Baltazar wants to know, if you were the captain of the USS Survivor, who from this season would you fill in for your Starfleet crew? What positions and rank would you give them? Okay. You want to fill out your bridge crew?
Wow. Sure. Well, you know, okay. Let's make Ryan, Mr. Spock.
Okay. So you're going to do like overlay them onto. Yeah. Okay. All right. So he's Spock.
We're going to do classic Trek. So okay. Ryan's Mr. Spock. Dr. Mike has to be Bones. And let's give Ben Kirk.
Okay. Oh, you're Kirk, though.
Oh, I'm Kirk. You're right. I am Kirk. Oh, no. Okay. Shoot.
Fine. He's Kirk.
Can I just fly the ship?
Yeah. Okay. Do you want to drill down any further? Do you have a Uhura, a Scotty?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess, let's give, Chrissy Uhura. Let's, Scotty, let's give to, let's give Scotty to Devin.
Devin is Scotty?
Yeah.
I feel like that Lauren could be Scotty.
Yes, that's much better, actually. Like, I'm changing it to that.
Right, where it's like, hey, what's going on down there? And like, well, it'll be ready when it's ready.
Perfect.
I thought there was a really good interaction between Cole and with Lauren. Like, he shut her up, and he was like, hey, like, can I finish what I'm saying? It's like, you know what? You could talk until your heart's content. Go right ahead.
Yeah, yeah, she's tough. She's really tough.
Yeah, don't be sassing Lauren.
Yeah.
Don't even try that. Isaac wants to know, how does it feel to be the only Gen Xer on the cover of Millennials versus Gen X, the DVD?
It feels weird. I mean, there should be three Gen Xers and three Millennials.
Do the Gen X people have an axe to grind on this? Is this ageism?
Well, I think, you know, I think it's a lot of things, but... yeah, it's a little weird, to be honest, for me. I feel very uncomfortable talking about it. But yeah, I'm very happy to be on the DVD. It's cool. I've never been on a DVD box before, so I'm excited about it.
Yes, okay. Would you vote somebody off the DVD box cover to get one of your Gen X friends on?
Oh, no.
Should they have made everybody's picture smaller so everybody can be included?
No, they can't do that either. But honestly, you know what they should stop doing cover-wise is... spoiler alert, stop putting the winner in the same spot on the DVD cover.
Are people buying the DVDs that haven't seen the season?
I mean, well, I did, but yes, yeah, so I would always have to, like, not look.
So people do, I mean, that it's a foreign concept to me, but, okay, so if people do that, they want to buy this season, they want to watch it.
Yeah.
So they should mix it up. The winner should be one of the six.
For sure, but, like, change the spot. Yeah, move it around.
Move the people around.
Yes, 100%.
And go for that.
Yeah.
Okay. David, Edward Morris wanted to know, I think he wanted to know what would your Survivor Halloween costume be, but what was your real Halloween costume?
Oh, this is embarrassing. I just keep recycling the same Halloween costume over and over and over. And anybody that follows me on social media already knows. But I always dress as Marty McFly, like a middle-aged Marty McFly.
Middle-aged Marty McFly. So you're the 2015 Marty McFly.
Yeah, it's your hair, Marty. Something's got to be done about your hair. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're the Marty McFly, like, with two ties on?
I got the Life Vest or
so you're the 1985 clothing Marty McFly, but middle-aged.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. I need to see a picture of this.
Oh, sure. I'll get you.
Big Back to the Future fan.
Oh, it's the best.
It really is.
Yeah. Well, number one is.
Yeah. I really like number two. Three, I could take or leave.
No one needs it.
I'll leave it. Did your dog have a Halloween costume?
Oh, that's actually not my dog. But if anybody wants to follow that dog, it's lady.duncan on Instagram. Yeah, really cute dog.
Okay. And then, do you do anything for Halloween?
I just went out to dinner. I didn't dress up. I did dress up at Oktoberfest in Big Bear. I was Martin McFly for that. And, that was a lot of fun. But yeah, I skipped, the Halloween festivities this year.
Right. I had told my son, Dominic, that you were coming here today. I said, David Wright is coming here tomorrow. And he said, David Wright? I said, not the baseball player, the survivor. And he said to me, oh, David Wright. That's like David Pumpkins, Dad. I said, yeah, you're right. You are right. Did you have lunch with Lucy recently?
I did. Yeah, Lucy.
How was that?
It was great. It was Lucy, her husband, and myself.
Tri-tip salads?
No, but we did. We had some oysters. We did have some fish. Yeah, it was really great seeing her. It'd been too long, and it's nice that you know, she doesn't resent me at all in any way. We had a really great lunch.
Yeah. Okay. How was Oktoberfest?
Oktoberfest is a blast. I go every year up to Big Bear, and actually this was the second time this year going because it's all month long, and I always have fun up there. I highly recommend anybody, if you like drinking beer and sawing logs in half, that you should get up to Big Bear.
Yeah. And you go every year, and then it's just like, do you do any of these lumberjack competitions?
No, I once did a stein holding contest, but I went out first, and I'm not going to humiliate myself again. But there's also a mechanical bull you can ride. There's also a bicycle where the wheels reverse, and you have to ride it for 20 feet. But no, we do have a cornhole tournament.
Which you were the champion of.
Again, yeah. So I think I've been the champion 3 or 4 times now.
Why are you so good at cornhole? Was that predating Survivor?
I'm actually really good at picking a cornhole partner, and that's really why I'm so good at cornhole. Yeah, I'm not actually
that good.
You're
downplaying your cornhole skills.
Unfortunately.
Okay. And you are still competing in Spartan races all over the place.
Yeah. I think I've got one next month, although I haven't bought the ticket for it.
That's post-Survivor, right? You never did a Spartan race before Survivor.
No, I ran a marathon once before Survivor, but I didn't do very well at that. And I would lie about my time, but I think it's a matter of public record so people could check. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was after getting back from Survivor. Can't remember if it was Zeke or somebody who organized a Spartan race. And now Zeke and I have been doing a bunch of them. And we got our trifecta. So the medals fit together to form one super medal. It's really cool.
Wow, that's like the Triforce.
Yeah, and actually Zeke bought me a frame.
Which,
for
I'm not talking about the Millennial Alliance of four people.
Right. Yeah, that's right. Exactly.
Yeah. that's amazing. Do you have any that I always, whenever I have you here, like I'm always like I feel like I don't pick your brain enough about your career in terms of any sort of like stories or anything that you might have from all your time working on different TV shows.
Oh God, yeah.
I saw you posted a picture of you in your I believe it was your first job of you were holding the slate with Helen Hunt.
Yeah, that's right. She really liked me. I don't know why, but she really liked me. And she would put me in all the episodes of Mad About You that she would direct. And rather than say action, she would say, "Go, David Wright." And I felt really great.
Pete.
Yeah, go Pete. Exactly, yeah. Yeah, I was a featured extra in all of those episodes that she directed.
And are they on your IMDb?
They're not. Although I think the fact that I was a PA there and a writer's assistant is, but no, they didn't put all the featured extra stuff on there. But yeah, and then I had a job at Suddenly Susan, a writer's assistant, and I had this huge crush on this girl I worked with, and found myself one night at a table with her, Brooke Shields, Kathy Griffin, and Jerry Springer, and Leif Garrett, and you know, the beers are being drunk, and I told Kathy Griffin, I admitted that I had this crush on this coworker, and then it turns out that, you know, Jerry Springer was hitting on her. It was a whole mess.
Oh my
night.
God.
Yeah. And I woke up in the co-EP's office at about 3 a.m. and I thought, what just happened?
Yeah.
So yeah, that was,
why was Jerry Springer there?
He was guest starring in the episode that week.
Okay.
Yeah. And I told him, like, don't worry about me. Like, you want to go after her, you go after her, like, whatever, it's fine. Mm-hmm. And he's like, no, David, I'm not an issue. Don't worry about me. But and then at the end of the night, he says, pursue your dreams. And then on his way home, he called this girl.
Yeah. He was pursuing his dreams. One final thought.
Yeah.
From Jerry Springer.
That's right.
What about Malcolm in the Middle?
Malcolm in the Middle was a blast to be a part of. I was there for six seasons, I think it was, and just a really tight group of people, and it was just a wonderful show. I don't know how much people really revisit these days, but I have nothing but fond memories of my time there, and I wrote a couple episodes, and actually that's where I met my writing partner. So and we've been writing together ever since. So it's it was nothing bad about that experience.
Yeah, I keep having people telling me that I'm missing the boat not watching Orville.
Yeah, and I haven't seen all of Orville, but I really enjoyed the two or three episodes that I watched.
Because you went to the set, right?
I did. Yeah, I got to walk around that starship. It's insane. Like, you can't believe how big it is. The only thing that bothers me a little bit about that set is it has stairs. I feel like in the future, we're not going to be using stairs on a starship anyway.
Yeah.
But in any case, no, it's a really funny show. And I think it got picked up for a second season today.
Yeah. The reviews, I felt like coming into the season, I follow closely, like, I'm a big Seppenwall fan and Dan Feinberg, and I feel like that they both said, oh no, Orville is bad. I was like, oh, I guess it's going to be bad.
Yeah.
And you had said that you had seen more of it than, and you said it was going to be good. I didn't trust you. I trusted Seppenwall and Feinberg.
Well, it's amazing. It's like the biggest disparity on Rotten Tomatoes between the critics' approval and the audience approval, and obviously the audience is really liking it, hence the second season pickup.
Why is that? Is there some sort of like a Seth MacFarlane backlash?
There is. I think people, critics anyway, don't like Seth MacFarlane.
Why is that?
Well, I mean, you know, Family Guy's humor, there are some negative things you could say about it. I mean, it's very misogynistic. There's some racism in there as well. I think, you know, the idea is that we're supposed to be, when I was there, you're supposed to be making fun of racism and misogyny, but at a certain point, are you making fun of it, or now are you just part of the problem? And I think critically, that's what Seth MacFarlane runs into.
Even after he hosted the Oscars?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to, yeah, I think, well, I mean, there's still a lot of jokes like that at the Oscars, so I think, but he's a wickedly talented guy.
Is it coming around because now there's these clips of these Family Guy jokes about like Kevin Spacey and Harvey Weinstein, that it was like Seth MacFarlane who was the,
oh my God,
he was the person, like, he was not afraid to say these things.
Yeah, it's amazing. I don't think there's going to be anybody left in Hollywood by the end of next week. It's going to be like Tom Hanks, and that's probably going to be it.
Yeah.
But good. I mean, you know, these people should be outed.
Tom Hanks and the David Wright that was in that other movie.
That's right, Pete.
Okay. Do you have a hashtag for today?
Hashtag for today. I always want to prepare these in advance. I don't have anything right now. Let's go with...
No, you shouldn't prepare them in advance.
No.
They should be, this is like, we're having like a living conversation.
I know, but I hate living conversations.
No.
That's not my wheelhouse.
we're live. The tribal council is live.
See, that's the worst. Well, yeah, well, I would always try to imagine.
Did you coin that? Is that you, like, were you the first person to say that?
To say live tribal?
Live tribal. I feel like that, it's now a thing, and yeah. I don't know who was a thing before talked about it. I'd love to, I'm sure that the listeners, they're really good at tracking this stuff down, can be able to pinpoint exactly the first time that was used.
To be honest, I'm
that
the first
vote where you played the idol for Jessica. I feel like that was the first time that was said.
Well, to be honest, I mean, I obviously remember saying it, and it was a hashtag and everything, but I think the only reason it was even in my mind to say it is I feel like I heard Fishback on this podcast say it, or maybe you.
No, so, that's like, hey, we are live.
That's exactly.
How about that tribal council?
Yeah, no. Yeah, so I'm not really sure, but.
So we've established also today that you are also a game changer that you coined live tribal.
No.
You also, what else did we say you did? Now there's an idol making kit on Survivor.
Yes, yes. I'm taking no credit for any of this, by the way.
So you are officially the game changer. One other thing I wanted to ask you. So I heard Jessica on the Why Blank Lost podcast this past week talking about the challenge that they did where she ended up getting some injuries. Jessica Lewis, I'm talking about. She had some scarring from the challenge where you guys are shackled. She talked about how Adam had, some had some issues with that as well. Did you have any sort of lasting injuries from that challenge?
Yeah, I mean, beyond the mental ones, the physical ones.
Or did you sit out? Did you sit out that one?
Well, actually, I did sit out that challenge. Yeah, so I probably would be in way worse shape, but I still have like a few scars here and there from it. Yeah, there's no escaping. Yeah,
in my mind, I'm like remembering it because I think that was on Thanksgiving night, that challenge. Like that was like the great that was that great 2 hour episode. I think that might have been the first hour. But you got to go to the reward, right?
Yeah, I got to ride in a helicopter, scared. And to go on the reward, and then people think that
it ended with the rock draw. That was the second. Hour,
I
right?
think that's right. Yeah, I should know. I hate to admit that I've watched my season more times.
Wait till it comes out on DVD.
I know. I can't wait. Look, but in any case, yeah, the Thanksgiving episodes are always the best ones on Survivor. I love those.
Yeah, that's. I mean, I don't think they've announced it yet. I'm planning for a 2 hour episode the night before Thanksgiving, but I guess we'll see.
Well, it's weird. We didn't get a 2 hour premiere, so who knows?
Yeah, I don't know exactly. Anyway, it started late in the season, so yeah, I feel right. like at some point, I think we're going to start to make up some time along the way. Are you going to the finale this season?
You know, I would love to know how you get tickets to that. I swear to God, I don't know how to do. I want to go. I really want to go.
Yeah,
but it's just like a hard ticket to get.
It's a tough ticket. Yeah, it's a tough ticket to get. Okay, all right. Did we nail down the hashtag?
Oh God, let's just do the hashtag Pete or whatever that character's name is.
I mean, that's a long character name.
Well. What's it, Pete? What?
David Pete Wright? You want to go with that?
That's sure, why not?
Okay, all right. What are you going to go home and then watch Millennials versus Gen X again?
No. I'll put that off for a couple days. I'm going to watch Mindhunter, I think.
Mindhunter.
Yes.
Yeah, you were telling me about this. So this is on Netflix.
Yep, David Fincher series.
Is it Mindhunter or Mindhunter?
Mindhunter.
So yeah. It's not like Minesweeper.
No, not at
not
all.
Not based
no, no,
on
no.
the video game.
All in the head.
Okay. And what happens? David Lynch is doing what?
No, David Fincher produced it, and he directed, I think, the first two episodes. And it's basically, it's very talky, but it's set in the 70s. These FBI guys are trying to figure out what makes the mind of a serial killer work, what makes them tick, because it's this new kind of thing that's emerging, and they're not sure why.
All right. Well,
that's my elevator pitch.
Yeah, sounds good. Congratulations on all of your success and impending greater success.
I hope so. Thanks so much. Yeah. And by the way, I had a blast here. It was so much fun. Yeah. It's a 5 minute drive. So it's
5 easy. Minute drive. Well, you must have been driving 200 miles an hour or
15.
Or you've got a flux capacitor in your car.
Well, yeah, I actually do have my clothes in my trunk. So, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, David, thank you so much for coming in here. Of course, you guys want to check out canvaspeople.com, promo code RHAP to get that special $0 pricing on the 11x14 canvas photo. You just pay the shipping. We have our voicemail podcast coming up. Paul Osleson is going to join me. Are you familiar with any of Paul's work on the Survivor Historians or on the Tribe podcast? Have you heard him before?
I'm embarrassed to say I have not, but okay. I'll bet he's great.
He is. He's very funny. We'll take your feedback questions, send them in. robhasawebsite.com/voicemail or 323-282-RHAP. Of course, you could email the show survivor@robhasawebsite.com as well. Of course, that if you want to come out and see us in New York City, your castmate Jessica Lewis is going to be there.
That's awesome. Yeah, I miss her. It's been so long.
So it's going to be a lot of fun this Wednesday night. robhasawebsite.com/S35KIA. Looking forward to hearing what you guys have to say in the comments. Take care. Have a good one. Bye.